2. The tires kicked up plumes of sand behind us as we drove from the local airport toward Castro's home. It had been over 5 years since I'd visited, and I'd almost forgotten how remote he was. I admired the man for taking the plunge. He spent his days guiding tourists on exotic and adventurous treks through the main sights of Australia's outback. The air conditioning raged from the clunky 4x4's vents, and Marcus played with the air, trying to make it colder.
"It's 90 degrees in December. This is wrong on so many levels."
"If it helps any, it's cooler in July." I wiped sweat from my forehead and steered the rented car on the rough roadway. There was little in the way of traffic, and I raced down the street, hoping to catch Castro at his house.
"How do we know he's even there?"
It had been an ongoing complaint from Marcus after I couldn't reach Castro on his phone. "His reception is terrible. We're going to find him drinking a beer on his deck." The drive was over an hour, but went by quickly as Marcus and I discussed our next steps.
"From here to Madagascar."
"Will Hunter join us there?"
Marcus asked. A huge white 2-ton truck barreled down the road, and I had to slow, craning the wheel to the left to avoid being creamed. I'll never get used to driving on the wrong side of the road. I watched the truck continue on, speeding even faster as it swerved in the middle. It's a little arrogant to assume driving on the right is the correct way, isn't it? I smiled at Marcus, but he didn't return it.
"Sure, Rex, whatever you say."
He grabbed his phone, tapping the screen.
"Should be a fork soon. We're staying left. Looks like 5 minutes.
At first, I expected to greet an envoy of vehicles, judging by the volume of dirt in the air, but with my window cracked, I began to smell the smoke. We were at a higher elevation with Castro's tour company at the far end of the valley. It became obvious that was the origin of the smoke. So far, there were no emergency responders on the scene. "Call 112. I pressed on the gas pedal, hoping the fire wasn't as bad as the smoke it had created, but I was sorely disappointed. The flames were higher by the time we neared the structure. His house hadn't been much more than a cabin, hidden from the sun by a rocky hill wall that helped to keep it cool. The entire building was engulfed in flames. Marcus frantically tried to explain our location to a dispatcher, but it would take anyone a long time to respond all this way into the wilderness. There was nothing but dune fields and mesa for miles in every direction. I clambered out of the vehicle, leaving it running, and ran toward the home. The sign near the turnoff had his business name, Tours by Castro, and I coughed from the thick smoke.
"Castro!"
I shouted his name. I tried to see if his truck was there and spotted it, along with a newer van closer to the home.
"Castro!"
The fire was spreading to his garage, and within minutes the flames jumped toward Castro's truck, which was parked near the open door. The explosion rang out loudly through the valley, and Marcus rushed beside me, staring at the destruction as pieces of the truck landed on the shale-colored ground.
"Was it those guys in the white truck?"
Marcus asked.
"I gave the description to the dispatcher."
"It probably was. I hope Castro wasn't home." I had a sinking feeling someone had known we were coming to offer him a job, and now he was dead. 4 hours later, after being grilled by the police, we were allowed to return to the airport for a quick hop back to Sydney in Hunter's hired bush plane. By the time we arrived at the hotel, Marcus and I were exhausted, ready to call it a night.
"Where's Castro?"
Tripp asked as I stepped toward the elevator.
"How long were you waiting there?"
Marcus demanded after jumping in shock.
"Long enough."
Tripp wore beige cargo pants and a short-sleeved white top, mostly unbuttoned. I noticed both arms were covered in tattoo sleeves.
"Castro won't be joining us," I advised him.
By the time we'd returned to the airport, both of our phones were out of juice, and I hadn't wanted to give Hunter the heads up anyway. He would have just gone ahead and hired someone else without my input.
"Why's that?"
Tripp asked. "He's dead." This elicited the reaction I wanted.
"Dead? Are you sure?"
"I saw him after his house fire finally burned out. I'm certain he's gone," I told him as I walked on and pressed the elevator button. Hunter had set us up in a nice hotel near the Opera House, and all I wanted to do was hit the shower and get a nap in before we figured out what came next.
"He's going to want to talk to you,"
Tripp said. Are you his personal secretary? I asked, and the man only grunted.
I'll let him know you'll join us in the bar for dinner in 2 hours,
Tripp said. Fine, but can you do me a favor?
That depends.
The elevator dinged and opened. Marcus stepped aside to let a young couple by.
Just don't tell Hunter about the incident. A man's dead, and you call it an incident? You're harder than I'd expected.
Tripp said it like this was a good thing in his books. Can you do that? I asked again.
You have 2 hours.
I gave Tripp a nod, and he locked gazes with me. He had the look of a military man or a lifelong police officer. He'd seen too much during his tenure with the SEALs and carried it with him everywhere he went. It was in his posture, his tone, and his gait as he walked.
See you then.
The doors closed with Marcus and me inside, and my friend exhaled.
Rex, we haven't even started yet, and we're already behind.
Castro was dead, and it might have been my fault. The guy always had a problem with gambling, and I'd guessed that was part of the reason he'd ended up isolating himself in the middle of the outback. The fact that someone had burned down his business might have had no connection with the search for the bridge. I clung to that hope as we entered our floor. Marcus stopped at his room beside mine.
2 hours?
He asked.
I guess so. I'll come get you.
With that, my sidekick was gone. For someone who hadn't grown up in the field, he had sure taken well to the difficult adventure. I was proud of him. I went into my suite, shaking my head at the lavish surroundings. This was my first time being catered to in my life. I'd had expense accounts allocated for artifact hunts before, but they were always limited and usually just kept me from the worst hotels. Definitely not in the top resorts. Hunter had had an air of excitement surrounding him the last couple days, and he was going to be disconsolate that my choice for a pilot was no longer available. Any delays would really set back our timeline. I sat on the bed and plugged my phone in. The red light flashed on the top right corner, and I headed into the bathroom. The water did its best to wash the sweat, smoke, and dirt from my skin, but the image of Castro's burned corpse on a gurney didn't rinse off quite so easily. I stayed under the scalding heat for some time, and when I emerged from the shower 10 minutes later, the entire room was fogged up. My phone held a few messages. Jessica.
Rex, was hoping we could get together again, maybe Sunday?
I deceived her at dinner about not leaving town. I scrolled to the next one. Richard.
You have to stop avoiding me, please. I have some information you might find useful. Call me.
I stared at the screen, wondering why he always felt the need to be so cryptic. Why couldn't he just come out and say it? It was his way of trying to ensure I'd contact him, but it wasn't going to work this time. With nothing but a towel wrapped around my waist, I lay on the bed, my eyes closing as my head hit the pillow. I needed to source another pilot. Someone I trusted. Someone on my team, so I wasn't overpowered in every decision by Hunter and Tripp. There was only one person left in my mind. I sent a message to her knowing she might not want to hear from me since I hadn't called her back after our fling in Germany. I sat still waiting for a response and saw three dots appear. They flashed for what felt like 5 minutes and vanished. When she did reply, the message was short and to the point. Elise.
Nope.
I ran my hands through my wet hair and rolled onto my side. There had to be someone else. All I needed to do was think. What was the name of the guy who'd airlifted us out of Nepal that one time? He was willing to go the extra mile. But I thought he might have had a drug problem. I set the phone down and closed my eyes as I considered my options. A hurried knock woke me sometime later, and I checked my phone, seeing no more messages from Elise. That was a burned bridge. More knocks. I'm coming, I called. My mind was blurry, but even a short nap was better than nothing. I did feel slightly more focused as I strode across the suite, finding Marcus, the culprit.
Rex, better get dressed.
He looked at my towel and I secured it.
Sorry, I dozed off. Come in.
Did you have any luck hiring someone else?
Marcus asked.
Sadly, no.
What about that one from Germany? What's her name?
Elise, and she's a hard no.
I remember Elise. She was...
quite the... Marcus smiled and I threw a throw pillow at him.
This isn't a joke.
We're supposed to be leaving for Madagascar tomorrow, and we're missing our pilot. I climbed into a pair of jeans and tossed on a short-sleeved shirt, buttoning it up.
Hunter has cash. He can hire locals.
Locals can be bought by the cultists. This mystery is running deep. I can't help but think Castro would have been safe if it wasn't for us, I said. Marcus shook his head as if trying to convince himself that wasn't true.
They couldn't have known. It was last minute. The Bush plane pilot paid in cash. He must have been tied up in something else.
You know what? He was always smoking cigars. He probably had a few too many beers and lit his porch on fire. Marcus's eyes blinked wider.
Is that why you called him Castro? The cigars?
The very same reason. After adding some deodorant and a splash of cologne, I moved for the exit. Let's find out what Hunter wants to do. And we were back in the elevator after too short of a sleep. Did you get any rest? I asked Marcus. We were alone and he leaned against the wall.
Barely. This whole thing has me wound up. How do you do it?
It's new to me, too. Usually we're investigating one site, and we have a far larger team of professionals. This worries me. Trip is a concern.
What's the guy's deal?
Marcus asked, and I glanced at the numbers, seeing we had 6 floors to go. Navy SEAL, single, never married. He's a killer, Marcus. That's why Hunter brought him on. He knows his way around a vast array of weapons, and he understands how to stalk and evade better than 99% of the population. The doors opened, and Marcus held still for a moment.
Is he on our side?
Let's hope so. The place was busier in the late hour, and I checked the time, wondering if it was the next day yet. It was almost 11. The bar was loud, filled with well-dressed patrons drinking heavily as music played from unseen speakers. I scanned the room, spotting Tripp with Hunter Madison at a private table apart from the action. We walked toward them, and I tried to avoid getting a spilled martini dumped on my shirt while Marcus stopped at a table chatting with 3 clearly intoxicated ladies. I reached for his arm, leading him away. Not the time. He shrugged an apology and followed me through the busy lounge. Hunter looked annoyed as we arrived, and he craned his neck to see around me.
Where's the pilot?
I swallowed and explained the recent events. All of them. He coughed and sank into his seat.
Then we're at a disadvantage. They know. But how?
Who's they?
Tripp asked.
The believers.
That cult? Do we really think a group of nutcases could have beaten us to the remote outback? They'd have to be.
Tripp paused and glanced at Hunter as he nodded.
Trip, they'll be on our heels this entire time,
our benefactor said slowly.
But why?
Marcus asked.
I thought they were into these redeemers, not the bridge.
They are connected. Just not in the way you might assume. One thing you should know is that they want the bridge. Not to open it, but to destroy it,
Hunter said. A waiter appeared wearing all black, his expression telling me he was ready to close this place down and go home.
What do you have?
Coffee.
Make that 2,
Marcus said, sliding in beside Tripp. I went next to Hunter, and we waited until the guy was out of ear's reach before speaking again.
You can't be too careful. I fear they're in this very room. They're always listening.
Hunter sounded slightly ridiculous, but he might have been right. I found myself looking around as inconspicuously as I could. A woman and a man bumbled their way to the booth behind us, the man slurring loudly as he shouted for another drink. Hunter frowned and lowered his voice.
If we don't finish this team off by tomorrow, our window to the Stone Forest narrows. My contact is expecting us, and I don't know if we can slip in otherwise.
The woman behind us spun around, kneeling on the bench to face us.
I hear Singy is beautiful this time of year.
The man with her started complaining, and she waved him away dismissively.
I think you should head out, love.
This angered him, and he stood stumbling over to her.
I bought you dinner. The least you could do is...
I jumped from my seat and stepped between them. You heard the lady. Time to exit. The waiter arrived with the coffees, and he set them on our table.
Everything okay?
I tilted my chin, waiting for this drunk buffoon to answer. He lifted his hands and walked away, returning to the bar in search of easier prey.
You really didn't need to do that.
the blonde woman said. She was smiling, her cheeks just slightly ruddy.
I can take care of myself.
Do you mind? We're having a private conversation,
Hunter advised her. She wasn't dressed like the other guests at the hotel. She had on high-waisted jeans, the legs faded, and hiking boots with a black tee.
Veronica Jones, at your disposal.
She walked closer, attempting to shake Hunter's hand. He didn't oblige.
As I was saying, we're...
I know who you are, Mr. Madison. And I also know this gentleman.
She indicated me.
And what, pray tell, do you want?
Hunter asked angrily.
You have a problem, and I want in.
You're a pilot?
Tripp asked, eyeing her up and down like a predator on the hunt for a kill.
Sure. Fly pretty much any type of birds, mostly Chinooks and Hawks, but I've tried them all. Planes, too. There's nothing like the loud, cramped, and sweaty cockpit of a Cessna zooming across the Indian Ocean.
Hunter's lips pursed and he crossed his arms defiantly.
I'll take your word on it.
Wait, how did you know we were here? I asked her. Hunter's warning about the believers rang in my mind. She lost her smile and her cocky stance shifted into something different.
I'll be honest. I was here with my plane, running a few tours in the area. You see, I have a bit of a niche business, hauling snotty trust fund kids around to remote regions so they can show off to their friends. The latest brought me to Sydney, and I advertised on social, picking up a couple more jobs, but I saw you.
She flipped her phone around. It was Hunter Madison in the same suit he wore now, walking behind some vapid-looking, duck-lipped woman taking a selfie in the hotel lobby.
I was checking out hashtags for this place, trying to see if anyone wealthy enough to take a private charter might be in the area, and as luck had it, I saw you, Mr. Madison.
What do you want?
He asked.
I heard you say you need a pilot. That's me. I'm the woman for the job.
She placed her hands on her hips and smiled widely. I had to admit her energy was electric and we did need someone.
You said you had a plane? How big?
Marcus asked her.
6-seater.
Then you're wasting our time. We can't take a bush plane across the Indian Ocean. It's thousands of miles. Veronica only smiled wider.
Then it's a good thing I have another one on the coast of Mozambique, assuming you can charter a flight out of Sydney.
Why should we trust you?
Tripp asked.
You shouldn't, but I'll tell you what. You don't have to pay me until we get to the Stone Forest. We'll discuss the payment.
Hunter rubbed his forehead and cut her off.
50,000 if we find what we're after in Madagascar. I'll pay you the same for each of our stops.
I was confident he'd do some digging on the woman when he returned to his room, but for this moment he was desperate. Hunter was dying and the tokens were within his grasp. My jaw dropped, but to Veronica's credit, she didn't flinch at the sum.
When do we leave?